Well, later on, we'll take your phone calls, but we're talking with Dane Wigington about geoengineering. Let's get into HAARP when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dane Wigington with us. Dane, of course, Nick Begich has been an expert participant for us about HAARP, but I want to get your take on the HAARP program, what you think it is, what it might be used for. Go ahead.
Well, certainly, Mr. Begich is the recognized expert, and I don't pretend to be on his level with this, but HAARP is intricately involved with the whole geoengineering scenario, and at this point, to tie it in with things I already mentioned, George, like the methane mass expulsion, and again, that issue should be investigated by all because it is a global game-changing event, and what is being proposed with HAARP and that issue, as this methane is now being released from the seafloor, entering the atmosphere, the latest proposal by the AMIG group, Arctic Methane Emergency Group, again, who is sounding the alarm as a global emergency, and I would agree with them in that count, is to use the ionosphere heaters, the HAARP facilities, to what amounts to nuking the atmosphere in a desperate and unknown experiment to degrade this methane. I mean, this is about as desperate as it could get to, you know, this is their, it's called Project Lucy, George, and this is a method of triangulating ionosphere signals toward methane clouds as they're releasing, and they are right now, and it's, again, we believe it's changing the climate and atmosphere by the day. So this is their solution. If these systems have helped release this to begin with, then their method of dealing with it is just to simply do more of this, and I think that's the definition of insanity, to simply keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. So, again, Project Lucy is a proposal by which, as this methane is released and is beginning to accumulate in the lower atmosphere, to triangulate these massively powerful ionosphere heaters at these methane clouds to try to degrade them to a degree that would then cause this methane to migrate further into the atmosphere in a more degraded form and start to create noctilucent clouds, which then would begin to reflect some of the sunlight. I mean, they are really grabbing at straws here. And to give you an idea how much they're grabbing at straws, one of the other proposals from the AMIG group was to somehow manufacture 1,000-ton sheets of plastic with 200-ton steel rims to try to somehow settle this down in the seafloor and cap this methane. I think even in theory that it's preposterous beyond comprehension. So these guys are really, really desperate. And what they have released is as dire as it gets, but what they propose to remedy the situation seems like a leap from the frying pan into the fire.
Are these planet killers, Dane?
Yes. The loss of the ozone layer is, absolutely. And again, There's no dispute scientifically about what the particulates do in the upper atmosphere. They cause ozone depletion, and we're seeing it. And, I mean, people can research this again on their own. On the methane event, George, previous events that are quite well documented with paleo data, the PETM event, Paleocene Eocene Thermal Maximum, was a methane mass expulsion from approximately 55 million years ago. Global mass extinction, depending on the study you look at, as much as 70% terrestrial extinction and as much as 90% aquatic extinction. As this methane is migrating from the seafloor to the surface, much of it dissolves into the ocean, and this acidifies the ocean. In fact, the oceans are acidifying, you may have heard this, at absolutely astounding rates right now. So it's feeding the ocean acidification, which feeds ocean extinction. When the methane hits the atmosphere, again, it's over a 10-year time horizon, it's 100 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2. So that's covering the layer with the Earth with a layer of glass, in essence. So during the PETM event, George, the one I mentioned that was the nearest example we have, they believe temperatures in the tropics, land temperatures, were as much as 140 degrees, ocean temperatures 105. You had a dead zone on planet Earth that was somewhere from about 30 degrees south to 30 degrees north. So, again, I don't want to end up there any more than anybody else does. But quite simply, the notion that these guys have that the fix for our disrupted climate is to fly as many jets as possible around the planet, spewing as much toxic metal particulate pollution as you can possibly spit out. The notion that that's a cure for climate disruption, it's about as insane as it gets, and certainly we can see from all available data that that appears to be the largest source of climate disruption, as we would expect it to be.
Are these people insane, Dane? I mean, what's their motivation here?
Well, again, you know, as we mentioned earlier, there's documentation that indicates the military strategic purposes of these programs, and perhaps certainly control of food supply. And now let's go back to a topic we touched on earlier, George. What we see off the Pacific Northwest coast. Okay, we see blanket spraying almost 24/7. We know this shuts down the hydrological cycle, so no water, diminished water over the Pacific Northwest. And wow, what do we see now? We see the beginnings of a water grab in the Pacific Northwest to control the water supply. So you shut the spigot off, create an emergency, grab the water rights, and gain yet more control. And as we mentioned earlier on the GMO issue, one thing I did not elaborate on is the same researchers in Norway and Germany that indicate fluoride is now perhaps in the mix also are seeing what they term as horizontal gene mutation in plant life from the absorption of these nanoparticulates. So based on that data, and we believe it to be accurate, there is no organic at this point. Things are being mutated, and we're seeing some very interesting things in the forest, plants that are much smaller than we've historically seen them, and many that don't come up at all. And again, when you look at the species extinction rate, profound things are clearly happening. So, no, there's no sanity in this equation. But again, how many things do we see, George, that are clearly not done by sane people? Depleted uranium being used on our own troops and so forth. So we have a lot of examples of this.
Well, you know what's so upsetting too, Dane, is the fact that it's hard enough, the atmosphere alone, the environmental changes that are occurring, the possibility of asteroid strikes. These are all out there as possibilities, but we seem to be doing this to ourselves, aren't we?
It couldn't be more true. And again, we have enough troubles without creating the largest one on our own. And people who would like to argue that these changes in climate we are seeing are just natural cyclical patterns, so that just could not be further from the truth. And in the case, if we only took geoengineering, if we ignored all the other anthropogenic damage that's been done to the planet, human-caused damage, which certainly can't be ignored. But if we do ignore all that, and we just take geoengineering alone, that's anthropogenic also. That's a human endeavor that's destroying the planet. And the notion that what's happening with our climate is a natural cycle, because the Earth does have natural cycles, certainly, we know that, and people die naturally. But if you take a gun, you stick it to someone's head, and you pull the trigger, that person wouldn't have died right then. And that's the same with planet Earth right now. I mean, the mathematical possibility that these changes are occurring right now in perfect lockstep with human activity, and I'm pointing to geoengineering in this case, are virtually zero. In the case of the Arctic, which the Arctic ice almost completely imploded this year. Again, this all relates back into the methane issue, back to HAARP. And the ice cap, the Arctic has not been ice-free for at least 3 million years and probably as much as 13 million years. And it's not happening right now out of coincidence. So it's a very vicious cycle. The more these guys spray, the more they feel they have to spray. It seems they're only concerned about keeping business as usual or trying to retain this power at any cost to anything or anyone, including all life on planet Earth. And so we hope to reach people within the system, George. And in the last about 6 weeks, I've had three scientists from major universities contact me, and one is definitely a hub of geoengineering. And I'm being told by one of these scientists that the people inside the system, as I alluded to earlier, military people certainly, I believe, are being told they're doing something for the common good, even though it's anything but. So we're trying to reach them. But this scientist has told me from within a major university that's involved with geoengineering that she believes she's seeing defections, that people are who were told these programs were benevolent and now realize because of the data that's being put out that they're anything but, and they're refusing to participate with these programs. And that's what we hope will begin to happen on a much larger scale, because there's no sanity at the top. There's no question.
No, there's no doubt about that at all. And let's talk a little bit more about whistleblowers. Can't we get more people to come forward?
Yes, we hope at some point there will be more. And I met some months back with a NOAA scientist, and off the record, she told me that they are aware of these programs and, quote, alarmed as hell, but afraid to step forward again because of no First Amendment protection. And we were told recently firsthand by a mainstream weatherman that they are being pulled into rooms and told, you do not touch this subject. Because, George, there's the things that they're doing with the weather right now, there is no question that any meteorologist that would tell the truth knows that this weather is not natural. It doesn't snow at 45 degrees or 50 degrees. Or in Atlanta about, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks ago, it was 83 one day, and it snowed 2 days later, then it's 70 2 days after that. I mean, this is anything but natural. So much of academia knows, so much of the scientific community knows that if we could just get this dam to break, it would break from many, many different directions, we believe.
Once it breaks, would it stop?
Well, now, if we're talking, when I say when it breaks, I'm referring to, again,
The information,
correct. And I don't think it would stop, no. And one other person, too, that stepped forward. In fact, Michael Murphy's done an interview with her. She's a very, very courageous woman named Kristen Mahan. She's a 12-year Air Force veteran industrial hygienist. It's their job to test for toxins like this, and she has stated on the record she's seen the canisters, she's seen some of the operations, and I wish we had more like her, but we do have an interview with her that has not been released yet, although she has done a few radio interviews, one of which we have posted at geoengineeringwatch.org. So yes, a few are stepping forward, but one of these scientists that I mentioned had contacted me in the last 6 weeks has been pulled into a room twice and told, I'm quoting from her directly, that if she continues to talk about geoengineering, there'll be consequences. Then we see other examples. For example, when the birds fell out of the sky, many people might remember all the bird deaths.
Yep. And
most people don't know that happened in, we believe, 34 places around the globe at the same time. Clearly something profound was going on. And former Bush aide John Wheeler was seen outside the Pentagon, it is believed, threatening to blow the whistle on these programs. He was found at a landfill 2 days later. So that's what happens to whistleblowers. But so many people know that if they just had enough cover, if there was enough public awareness of these issues, I believe they would come from every corner.
I think so, too. And they'd keep coming, too.
Yes, they would.
Well, this is an interesting paradox, to be sure. I want to talk a little bit about the fluoride that we are finding in our drinking water, but you claim that it's also showing up where, in Europe?
Well, the last 60 tests they've had in Europe, again, do show fluoride, and we're in the process of testing here, and that may be one of the artificial ice nucleating particulates. And ice nucleation is a very interesting science. People think ice freezes at 32 and that's it. It's not the case. Depending on the material, again, I ask people to remember the chemical nucleation that happens with their first aid ice pack. So they clearly are ice nucleating snowstorms. Again, the Chinese openly announced it. The fluoride may be a part of that. But, again, given the equation that we have and the data we have from these same researchers, if these fluoride nanoparticles are indeed being dispersed and they are of that size range, they are being absorbed into everything we eat. And there's no getting around that. And, George, these same researchers tested the grass that the livestock eats in Norway, and they calculated how much aluminum a cow would consume there over the course of a year, and it was just over a half a kilo of aluminum. Now, that doesn't mean all that aluminum is going to be absorbed into the cow's organism, but if it's consuming that much, much of it will be absorbed. So, and they're seeing a cow mortality at a much earlier time frame than they should. So, again, the amount of metal that's being absorbed into everything is absolutely staggering.
Well, this is all coming down to a head. I just can feel it, can't you?
I can. And, you know, this is a very catalyzing issue, though. And I just had here in Northern California a contact from the Tea Party people up here, and they're onto this issue now. And, you know, it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum we're talking about here. Nobody wants to be a lab rat. Nobody wants to be the part of a grand experiment without their permission or consent. And that's exactly what we are. And the amount of total global life climate disruption by these programs, it can't be overstated. People should consider how much metal does it take to cover the entire sky with these particulate clouds. It's just inconceivable amounts of metal. And on the aluminum coming down, too, again, the tests are so high. Off the side of Mount Shasta, George, which is considered to be the pristine water source in Northern California, there are snow tests from the side of that mountain with as much as 61,000 parts per billion of aluminum. It's literally off the charts for toxicity. So, and people would argue that, well, aluminum is a very abundant element in the Earth's crust. I believe it's about 8%. And so in some manner, we should expect it to be floating around. That's simply a lie. Although aluminum is an abundant element, it does not exist in the environment in free form. It doesn't float around. It doesn't come down in the rain. That's absolute nonsense. So this is being mined and refined. That's how it gets in the rain, period, and dispersed. And the damage it's doing and has already done is really unquantifiable. So this is a crisis of the first order.
Some people think, Dane, that we're being sprayed with Prozac to kind of dumb us down.
I don't know why they would need to do that, given the metals that we're already absorbing. You know, if you take statements from internationally recognized neuroscientists like Dr. Russell Blaylock, you're probably familiar with him. And he has stated on the record the lethality of these particulates. They're so small, again, in the 10 nanometer range, that they go, and people don't know what a nanometer is. A nanometer is 1/1,000,000th of a meter. It's inconceivably small. And so these particulates are so small, they go straight through the lung lining into the bloodstream, where they adhere to cell receptors like a plaque. They go in, but they're almost impossible to get out. It's a very slow, insidious degradation of the human organism. And again, we have experts that are speaking out on this, the ones that have the courage and the moral compass to do so. So it's up to people to investigate this, George. But again, if this issue was brought out into the open, I believe it would so catalyze people from all political spectrums that this would be a common battle that must be won. It, in fact, must be won, or I believe our chances are extremely dim.
Well, is this ever being discussed at the United Nations level?
It has. It has. In fact, Rosalind Peterson has been there. It's been brought up. But I can say firsthand that such organizations are a dead-end road. I've personally been in high-level Cal EPA meetings. One was arranged by a congressional rep, closed-door meeting, five high-level EPA officials. I was told to my face, in so many words, the system is rigged, that because they are mandated to test for, and I'm quoting, combustion particulates only. The rest of the sample goes out the window. It doesn't matter what's in it. Now, that's a rigged system, period. In California, they stopped testing for aluminum in the water in 2002. More preparation for the massive dumps that have been occurring. I've been in Barbara Boxer's office, and my God, what a futile venture that was. Absolutely complete dead end. I've spoken in front of the California Energy Commission in Sacramento, supplied their scientists that were at that meeting with geoengineering data. The meeting was held because the state knew it was losing 20 to 40% of its rainfall, and I'm quoting now, from particulates of unknown origin. It's absolutely preposterous that the state of California, that studies everything over its airspace, would not know where this stuff's coming from. They've studied the particulates from China. Aluminum and these metals are not amongst them. So clearly it's falling from the sky. It's clearly these aerosol disbursements, but the state can't say anything because it appears, anyway, that they are getting 30, 40 billion a year from the feds, and that is a purchase of silence for any resistance on these programs. I've spoken in front of CARB, California Air Resources Board, with a room full of farmers, George, that are being made to buy new equipment that they cannot afford because of the particulate matter their older equipment puts out, which is mathematically completely insignificant compared to what's being dumped from the sky that these agencies ignore.
I want to talk just for a very brief moment. Well, we'll do that. We'll do that when we come back, Dane. And I want to get into your work in the renewable energy area, too. That's very important. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's Wednesday. That means it's time to sound off, and you can send your editorial to editorial@coasttocoastam.com. Include your name and phone number. Write it about a minute's worth, and if we like it, we'll have you record it like this.
This is Suzanne from Nebraska, and this is my sound-off. I thought I was worried in the summer of 2008 when it looked like the financial markets would collapse and the world would end. Then I got really worried in the fall when Congress decided to bail out Wall Street. I was worried that the Congress would bail out the banks but not the auto workers until the Automotive Industry Financing Program was established to save thousands of American jobs. But I got really worried when I found out that the Federal Reserve loaned more than $4 billion to BMW and nearly $5 billion to Toyota. It worried me that Goldman Sachs put nearly $13 billion in the taxpayer-funded AIG bailout. But I was really worried when I found out that the bailout gave more than $16 billion to England's Barclays Bank, nearly $20 billion to France's Société Générale, and $21 billion to Deutsche Bank in Germany. I mean, whose jobs were Congress and the Federal Reserve really trying to protect? Well, it turns out they're doing a great job of protecting their own jobs, because 81% of the representatives and 58% of the senators who were up for re-election in November were sworn in as members of the 113th Congress. This is Suzanne in Nebraska, and this has been My Sound Off.
And welcome back, Dane Wigington with us. Dane, before we take calls next hour with you, let's talk a little bit about two things that are dear to your heart, of course, the wildlife preserve and the renewable energy that you've worked on. Let's talk about the preserve, first of all. Tell me about this.
Well, this is an important area of land, again, being next to Lake Shasta. It's kind of a migratory corridor. And this forest was completely pristine 10 years ago. And the difference from then till now is absolutely astounding. We see springs that are not very vibrant anymore compared to what was an explosion of life only 10 years ago. And again, you can only saturate the soils with so much bioavailable toxic metal, block the sun, stop photosynthesis, cause excessive heating. Again, that when the HARP facilities are being used, there can be extreme high pressure zones that cause abnormal heating. We're seeing temperatures that are really off the charts, at or near record temperatures day in, day out. So this whole region is suffering horrifically. And the effect of that, George, is really global. As I mentioned earlier, the boreal forests are suffering terribly. And so when you block the sun, you create this these particulates are desiccants, by the way. They suck all available moisture out of the atmosphere. So we rarely see dew in the morning. People should think about that in whatever region they're in. This is a phenomenon that's really all over. So you have these particulates that's spraying. It's blocking moisture. It's shredding the ozone, more intense sunlight. It's drying out everything on the ground. The forests are much, much drier. Now let's add the toxic aluminum to the soils, which are basically killing the trees slowly. Now let's cover them with incendiary dust, which these particulates are incendiary. Now, when rainstorms do come in the summer, the monsoons and so forth, for example, because these particulates, again, we see them spraying these individual cells. We can see them with binoculars actually over these cells, basically diminishing the rain, eliminating these rain cells. And now you have more lightning because you have a very conductive atmosphere. So on the preserve in this area around here, we've had horrific, catastrophic fires because, again, you have this forest that's being basically systematically killed. You have rainfall being diminished, and you have more lightning and incendiary dust. So to give you some figures behind that, last year, Siberia lost almost 100 million acres of forest. That's hard to get your arms around. The U.S. lost about 8 million acres. And then we see the catastrophic fires happening in Australia, Tasmania. Temperatures in Australia hit 130 degrees this year, and we're having similar heat in the Pacific Northwest, so this forest just simply can't take it. So to answer your question, it's tough to see a forest that you've bled, sweat, and cried in for a lot of years trying to enhance it with work on an industrial scale, working with governmental agencies, of which I've done 6 programs with governmental agencies to restore habitat, and to watch it all die before you is tough.
It's frustrating indeed. And how did you get involved with the project?
Well, they have programs to help enhance important habitat areas, and so I've done 3 projects with USDA and 3 with Cal Fire, a California agency, and put a lot of my own money into it. But, I mean, it's literally dying at an ever-increased rate, and it looks quite different from what it did many years ago. And what people don't realize, George, when you lose these boreal forests, again, the oxygen output, which I mentioned earlier, it's diminishing greatly. And, in fact, from times in paleo data, if going back to previous eras in the planet's history, you had oxygen content as much as 40% on the planet. In more modern times, hovering around the 20-21% range. Now, I've seen reports that show it down 18% or lower in rural areas, forested areas, and as low as 12% in urban areas. Our oxygen content is plummeting. You can't kill the lungs of the planet, and this includes phytoplankton, which is the other source of oxygen on planet Earth. It's being greatly decimated by this increased UV. So the other source of oxygen is going down, and here we are again, yet one more scenario. No oxygen, no life on Earth. And we are plunging into that scenario. And in the oceans right now, George, there's thought to be 400 dead zones. Those are hypoxic zones, no oxygen. So the walls are truly closing in from every side, and it's not coincidence that all roads seem to lead back to geoengineering.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Now, you also have done some work in the renewable energy field. Tell me more.
I have, but it goes back a long ways. I'm a former Bechtel Power employee, and I worked on one of the first commercial solar plants in the continental U.S. Bechtel's a bit of a four-letter word now, like Halliburton, and I left very early on for reasons that I things I wasn't comfortable with, I would say, and been on my own ever since, but I've been off the grid here in this location for about 12 years. Now, on that note, in regard to renewable energy, you have NATO countries basically eliminating or cutting back drastically on their renewable energy programs at the same time that they clearly have signed on for geoengineering. So one would assume you don't pay to block the sun and then pay to put up solar panels. That's not really productive. So, you know, again, all these dots connect. And then to get these countries to sign on, we see more miraculous events that we certainly can't attribute to coincidence. At the Copenhagen Climate Conference, they had record low temperatures at the time of the conference, right in that region, in spite of temperatures to the contrary in most of the surrounding regions. Same thing again in Cancun. And we feel this is a demonstration of the power of geoengineering, and they absolutely do have this power. By the time they manipulate jet streams and ice nucleate whatever moisture is available, they absolutely can and do cool huge regions of real estate at the cost of a worsened overall warming. So that's what people have to consider in this equation. You don't get something for nothing. It's like seeding for rain. This doesn't take a big intellect to figure out. If you cause rain to fall in one place, it doesn't reach another place. So this stuff's not hard to see, but again, in the case of geoengineering, they can and do cool huge sections of the planet, but at a very, very high cost. It's cutting one's nose off to spite one's face.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Now, with things that have been happening around the planet, of course, they're talking about the possibility of using coal for fuel again for cars, cleaner, without really burning it. Have you heard about that?
I haven't heard about that, but again, whatever potential energy sources they come up with, and whatever may have been suppressed, you know, so-called free energy that may have been suppressed, none of that's going to matter if we have a planet that won't support life. And this is why, again, I focused on this issue, because there are a tremendous amount of issues we could all focus on. But I would make this argument, if you can't walk out the door and breathe without sucking in a lung full of heavy metal, you have a problem of the first order, and you're not going to be fighting anything for long if you don't deal with that. And to add to that, now, we all know about the smart meters and the radio frequency exposure from the cell phones and the cell towers and so forth. Canadian journalist Will Thomas, I know you know Will, and he's done tremendous work. He's working with us at Geoengineering Watch right now, and we have data from some of these European researchers, and he's combined that to address the issue of the fact that our bodies are now much more conductive. We're absorbing these conductive metal particulates, and now that has made us much more susceptible to these radio frequencies. I mean, that's not hard to connect those dots. If our bodies and our cell receptors have these conductive metal particles attached to them, then we more or less become an antenna. And this is another bad mix on top of the synergistic toxicity that I mentioned earlier. So yet another aspect of geoengineering that's sucking the noose around our necks.
Well, you know, Dane, this is a problem that is huge. It is worldwide. It's been going on for how long, you say?
All available data indicates probably back to the late 40s, and we have a document posted on Geoengineering Watch that we found in the NASA archives from 1966 outlining the U.S. Weather Mod programs at that time. It's 80 pages long, and they had budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars then, so this has been happening for a very long time.
The president's science advisor, John Holdren, of course, has reportedly talked about population control. What is his involvement, if anything, in this?
Well, he's certainly an advocate for geoengineering, and that can be found online, too. People can just Google his name and put geoengineering next to it. So we see all these people pushing for geoengineering, but none admitting to this elephant in the room that's so colossal that it's unimaginable that it can be hidden. I mean, people should look up and see that our skies in many days, it looks like another planet. And it's, again, the ramifications from this are unfolding by the day around us. So you have people like John Holdren pushing this. You have scientists like the Arctic Methane Emergency Group that are saying we must do this immediately. In fact, the term they used, George, was we must commence immediate wartime scale geoengineering to avoid planetary catastrophe. That is their words exactly. So clearly somebody is out to lunch here. I don't argue that planetary catastrophe is unfolding around us, but we know geoengineering has been going on fully deployed for decades. It's fueling the fire. It's not helping. And what kind of arrogance could believe that you could throw a giant wrench into the Earth's life support systems and have a good result? I think that's a pretty ludicrous notion. So anyway, these people are definitely proponents of these programs, George.
Tell me about yourself, Dane, as a younger man. As a boy growing up, were you always interested in the environment?
Well, yeah. When I grew up in Upland, California, which is the smog capital of the world, and literally they would cancel recess and cancel baseball games, and you couldn't see a quarter mile. And I was baffled at people thinking that was normal, and all I could think of was getting the hell out of there. And so you can imagine my distress and coming to an area like this, expecting to find a pristine wilderness, and then realizing I was being sprayed like a bug from above. So, it's a battle again, George. I didn't want to, but feel I can't avoid. And we need help with this desperately, by the way. And everybody out there can help with this immensely if they simply learned about this issue, understood that it's your children and your family surrounding, everybody around you, all being exposed to this. And it's up to all of us to bring it to a halt. So, again, I implore people to educate yourself somewhat on this, find credible data, pass it on to others. Don't run out and point at the sky and start ranting. That doesn't do any good. But if you have a credible flyer, maybe a DVD like Michael Murphy's Why in the World They Spring, you can make copies from that, pass them out. I mean, we have to get this to light, and we don't have a day to spare.
No, the clock is ticking, isn't it?
It is ticking. It is ticking. And again, the gravity of our situation regarding this one issue, and I'm not negating a lot of the serious issues that we face right now. I mean, things you've outlined in some of the commercial breaks and so forth, all serious issues. But I would make the argument that if we do not have our health, if we are literally not firing on all neurons and our body's shutting down from this constant exposure, we're not going to engage in any battle or address any concern. And that's literally the road we're on. And the planet is in the same boat as us, George. It can only take so much. And
that's
it has
true.
Reached its breaking point. And quite simply, I believe, based on available data, if they don't stop the spraying, we are going to be past any point of return if we're not already.
How many people do you talk to about this and they simply don't believe it?
Plenty. In fact, I hung up on my first radio host of 100 or more shows tonight, just this evening, and he would not let me string two or three words together without shutting me up. And clearly he was so afraid of this possibility that he just simply couldn't listen to a word I had to say. So there was no point in carrying on the conversation any further. But more and more people are, in fact, listening because it's getting hard to ignore when the bark is being burnt off of trees. So I think I would argue this. I believe the climate is disintegrating so quickly and being fueled by these programs that I don't think they can hide this much longer. And I'm not sure what that means or where that goes. And a lot of people misquote me on things I say, and I hope They listen carefully, and I'm not saying the world's going to end this year, or I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just simply saying that the damage they have done is so horrific, and they're continuing to fuel that, that I don't think it can go much longer without this being recognized and acknowledged by enough people where it comes to light. And there's also a scenario, George, called double collapse scenario.
Now, what is that?
And that what they're doing with geoengineering, they are keeping the planet from responding to the damage that's being done. It's like keeping a lid on a boiling pot while you're stoking the fire below. You can only do that so long. And when geoengineering stops, and it will stop one way or the other at some point, no matter what, whether that's by societal collapse or being made to stop, there will be a very horrific, all available data, I should say, indicates there will be a horrific climate rebound. It's when you've had the Earth in a straitjacket this long and doing the things they've done, then once those chains are released, I mean, there'll be a horrific rebound in climate events. But that has to happen. We must do that. It's like the heroin addict on heroin. I mean, you can keep doing heroin, and we know where that leads, or you can stop and go through the difficulty of coming off of that, because these programs, not only are they decimating to everything, they're keeping the planet from responding. The in many ways, climactically, again, it's like keeping a lid on a boiling kettle. These particulates diffuse storms. They stop convection. They stop the planet from large cyclonic rotations. People should wonder why there's no major hurricane impacts into the U.S. in the last 6 years. Well, according to the Discovery Channel, the hurricane suppression program was reinstituted in 2006. You don't hear about it anymore. But, again, you can't throw a wrench into all these natural systems and have a good result. It's not possible.
No, it's not possible at all. We're going to take phone calls with you next hour, Dane. For people who are very concerned about what is going on, they have talked about it. Did you know that there are some groups, though, like in Los Angeles, where they are monitoring, they're looking at these chemtrails, they're trying to analyze them, specialized citizens who are just fed up?
I've heard of that. And, you know, one more thing to mention, the, quote, environmental groups. Where the hell are they? And, you know, they won't acknowledge anything. Sometimes they don't even answer our inquiry, no matter how much data we send to them. Whether they're bought, sold, and paid for also, I don't know. But they are literally, in order to make themselves feel better, they're out mowing the lawn while the house is burning to the ground. And these people should be held accountable, because they are absolutely doing way more harm than good by convincing themselves they're doing some common good task while they're ignoring this most dire issue.
Is that what frustrates you the most about all of this?
Certainly.
That people, they just disappear.
They sit the bench and they bang their drum about this issue and that issue that are absolutely insignificant compared to the geoengineering issue. So we hope they find their backbone soon.
How many people do you think are organized and part of this effort to try to fix this?
It's increasing rapidly. It's increasing rapidly, and we've had some calls from people who have considerable voice and resource in recent weeks, and that are realizing the gravity of this issue. So I think it will be on the radar much more and soon. And again, one of those reasons is it simply can't be hidden. You have Weather Channel. And by the way, Weather Channel, NOAA, these agencies are all run by the same players that are running geoengineering, George. NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, all its modeling is done by, guess who? Raytheon. Guess who owns the HAARP patent? Raytheon.
Sure.
Raytheon does all the modeling for the National Weather Service.
Well, the industrial military complex. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.